Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, let's talk about music. We heard a little bit just a little while ago. We heard, actually, I believe it was from the Seattle Symphony Orchestra performing Brahms' Second Symphony. It's conducted by maestro Gerard Schwartz. And Schwartz has led a long celebrated career in the world of classical music, starting as the co-principal trumpeter in the New York Philharmonic. He's gone on to become music director of numerous iconic festivals and conduct among the most prestigious orchestras around the globe. And he recently became the member of the Frost School Music School of Music faculty. His first performance is this Saturday. Schwartz has also been named the new music director of the Palm Beach Symphony Orchestra. Joining us now in studio, Mr. Schwartz, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Great pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
By the way, I mean, welcome to South Florida. I should say that.
It's wonderful to be in South Florida, I must say.
Well, you're going to find out how wonderful it is in the wintertime. I promise that. What brought you here? What attracted you to South Florida? Because, I mean, a person like you, really, doors could be open anywhere.
Thanks for that. It was the weather. I'm looking forward to how beautiful it's going to be in January. Actually, I like it. I like the heat, so I love it now. So I'm very happy. But everything I've always done in my life has always been for a musical reason. So when I went to Seattle, for example, where I spent 28 years, they said, oh, you're coming here because it's so beautiful, the mountains and the water, and even though it rains a lot, it certainly... And I said, no, I came because of the orchestra. So it's not dissimilar here. When the Frost School asked me to come down and spend a week conducting the orchestra last season, I just fell in love with the orchestra. I fell in love with the environment. It was a fantastic music school. And they asked me to apply, which I did, and I then have now become a member of the faculty. So I really came here because I'm dedicated to teaching, something I've always loved, and because the atmosphere is so incredible at the school. And that's really why I came.
I've always wanted to ask this question. I always love asking this question, I should say, of artists when they come here, is how is South Florida viewed in the music world?
Well, it's a changing question because it has developed so much over recent years. You know, when we think about the history of South Florida, a lot of visiting orchestras. I've come here many times when I was in the New York Philharmonic, when I was in Seattle, we toured here with mostly. I've been here a lot, as any musician who tours would, but it's been a little difficult getting footholds for symphonic music here. Cleveland came here, of course. The Florida Philharmonic disbanded at some point. You have the great school that Michael Tilson Thomas runs. But what's happened in recent years is more and more, because of the art world, because of the theater world, because of the music world, South Florida has become a real destination rather than just a place for what you guys call snowbirds, I guess, right?
Okay, so not just for audiences, but also for performers, because, I mean, you know, I wondered, like, some of the stories that you heard from the students that you've been working with, you know, what attracted them to this
I think
area?
What attracted them to the school is the incredible faculty. Most students in a music school come for the teacher. If they want to study with Aaron Tindall, who's our soloist, he's one of the great tuba players in the world, one of the great teachers, and people are beating their door down to come and study tuba with him. Now, the fact that it's here and it's so beautiful, and the rest of the faculty is so extraordinary and so imaginative and so far thinking, led by one of the great leaders in the world of music education and music in general, Shelley Berg, a great pianist, a great jazz artist, a great arranger, a great composer, but he's an innovator in the way he approaches music education. And so what happens here at the Frost School is that there's so much flexibility. You can be a tuba player and you want to play in a symphony orchestra, but then you can also learn about jazz. You can learn about contemporary music. You can be a part of a recording facility or learn about copyrights or learn about anything that in the music world with a kind of fluidity that no other school has.
So I'm wondering, like, is it more the program? Because, I mean, from what you said, sometimes if it's the right teacher, people want the teacher.
Right.
really more than anything.
They come for the teacher, and then they find this unbelievable program. Now, of course, there are times when people will come for the program as well, especially in music education, musicology, music theory, things like that. But performers, people who are instrumental majors, you know, clarinet major or a trumpet major or a violin major, they come for the teacher primarily.
Do we have the infrastructure here to really, you know, to train these elite musicians?
Yes, not only do we have the infrastructure to train the elite musicians, we all know that everybody can't be the next Lang Lang or Yo-Yo Ma, and so we're training them on very different levels. Yes, if you want to be Lang Lang, one of the great pianists alive, we'll train you to do that. We have a phenomenal piano faculty for that. But if for some reason you don't get that opportunity, there are many other levels of education that we're dealing with. So it's not you become the greatest pianist in the world or you better get into another field. I mean, it's a unique place and an extraordinary place, and that's why I'm here.
You started as a trumpeter, also tuba, right?
I started as a trumpeter.
Okay, as a trumpeter. What drew you to that instrument?
Everyone who plays a musical instrument is drawn to it for a personal reason or because their parents made them. You know? the mother says, you must play the piano. You must play the piano. So when I was five, my mother made me play the piano and my sisters, and we played the piano. But my parents were from Austria, and they were very, very involved and committed to the arts. I would say next to their medical practices, the arts was the most important thing in their lives. And they were doctors, and they took us to the Philharmonic, took us to the opera, we were very, very lucky. We lived just outside New York City. They took us to see a movie called Aida by Giuseppe Verdi, the movie version, and I heard those herald trumpets in the triumphal scene in the last act, and I was seven, and I said, that's what I want to play that. And my mother, who was a psychiatrist, who actually knew Freud, you know, so here's my said, my son's going to be a whistleblower playing the trumpet? Forget it. And she called me a whistleblower until I got into the New York Philharmonic.
Finally, she accepted. Finally,
she still didn't accept it. But what was fascinating is that when she tells a story, when she was pregnant with me, she had continuous dreams that I would be a conductor. How's that?
Wow.
And I think that's why I avoided it for so many years.
Well, you know what? Because that led me to this other. I mean, so you've played in symphonies, but you've been a conductor. You're now an educator, and I'm wondering, you know, do you have a preference? Is there one that you feel more natural to doing?
Well, we musicians, most of us, are educators. I mean, when I was a trumpet player, I taught at Juilliard and I taught at other schools. As a conductor, I started a wonderful conducting program at a summer festival I run in North Carolina at the Eastern Music Festival. So we all do. I don't know of any distinguished musician who doesn't teach and give back. What I'm doing now that's different than that is I've made a real commitment. It's not, oh yes, come and take some lessons and that's fine. But I'm actually on the faculty. I am full-time. I live here. And this is, in a sense, my next mountain. You know, my first mountain was to become a trumpet player. I wanted to be in the New York Philharmonic, and I got that. Then my next mountain was to be music director of a major orchestra, which I did in Seattle, and we helped build the hall there, and I committed my life. And then when I left Seattle, the next mountain I wanted to climb was to try to have an influence in exposing and educating an audience, to expand the audience. So I started the All-Star Orchestra, which is an orchestra from musicians all over the country. And we've now won 7 Emmys with our TV series. We have 7 million students on the Khan Academy. So I think I'm making a little dent in that educational, the idea of trying to educate people, mostly young people, but older people as well, and to expose them to great music. So now the next one is to be on the faculty of a major, maybe in my estimation, the most important music school in the country, an incredible environment. And besides that, I get to live here. Think of that. It's not bad. You get up every morning and you look outside and it's gorgeous. My wife said to me, oh, look at the sky. Look at, you know, the pinks and the blues. And I mean, you know, we're New Yorkers. The view from our apartment in New York is of brick buildings. And here we look outside and it's all greenery. And oh, it's a real joy.
Again, I'm talking with Gerard Schwartz, the maestro and conductor, recently joined the Frost School of Music faculty. He became the music director for the Palm Beach Symphony Orchestra. And you can see his debut performance conducting this weekend at the Frost School of Music. We have details on our website, WLRN.org. What are the differences that you see in audiences, though, for classical performances? You know, as you said, like part of South Florida for a long time, it was just snowbirds. But the area has grown so much that you don't have to wait for the winter.
Well, here we are, yeah. Saturday night.
Right.
We're giving our first concert. This is September. You know, there are those people that think that you can't do any concerts in South Florida until January because there isn't anyone here. Well, my wife and I live in Coral Gables, and in our neighborhood, every house is occupied by someone. They're not empty waiting for the weather to change. Now, it doesn't mean that some people have homes there that live in Boston or or Chicago or whatever, but it has changed dramatically. And as far as the audience, I don't know the answer because I'm new. I do believe that we will make over a period of time a tremendous impact with programming and with great soloists and with great performances. I've always had this idea that the most important thing we can do as performers is to give great concerts. You give great concerts that are moving and exciting, people will come and people will support you. If the concerts are not on a high level, why would they bother? You know, they could stay home and listen to a fine CD. And I feel that way. Sometimes going to concerts, people say, oh, what's wrong with the audience? I say, there's nothing wrong with the audience. But on occasion, there's something wrong with what's going on stage. Just because you're playing Beethoven doesn't mean that you're going to move the audience.
So it sounds like concerts right now seem to be almost more important than the recorded piece because, I mean, the audiences want a new experience.
I agree. I think so. I mean, of course, I'm a big recording person. You know, I have 350 recordings I've made. But, and I love recording. I mean, it's fun for me, and I love listening to recordings. But there is nothing like the experience of a live concert. And I go to concerts all the time. Here, I know at the Guzman Hall at the university, my wife and I are going to, I think, 8 concerts over the next 2 weeks. You know, I looked in the catalog of what's going on there. So I got tickets for everything. I mean, we could stay home and watch TV, you know, so given the, not that I'm against TV, please don't say, but given the choice, I'm going to be in Guzman listening to great music. I went to the Mancini Institute concert the other night. It was fantastic. I mean, what an opportunity.
You know what? One of the things I wanted to mention, too, it was a welcoming statement of your arrival to the Palm Beach Symphony Orchestra. Executive Director David McClymont, I hope I'm saying that right.
Yep.
He said, quote, I'm confident he'll take the Palm Beach Symphony Orchestra to new heights, attracting more diverse audiences in the greater Palm Beaches and expanding our reputation across South Florida. What is that diversity look like? I mean, because you talked about it a little bit a while ago, it's you're trying to educate audiences, but you also mentioned younger audiences.
Well, you know, I like all audiences. I don't care what their age. I like old audiences,
right,
and I like young audiences. We in our world all say, oh, we have to worry about the young audience. Well, yes, we do, of course. You do that by educating. You do that by exposing people. But think of it. You're 25 years old. Your great passion in life is not going to symphonic concerts. You like it. You've been experienced. But you're looking to have a long-term relationship with someone. So you ask them out on a date, and you go and sit in a concert for 2 hours where you can't talk. Not likely. You're going to go out to dinner, or you're going to go someplace where you can have a chat and where you can have a drink. Or let's take it further. You're now have a relationship and you have children, and you work really hard. And at night you come home and you're exhausted. And on occasion you get to spend the night with your family. Do you say, "Oh, I'm not going to spend the night with my kids tonight. I'm going to go to the concert"? No, I have a daughter who's a surgeon, and her husband's a surgeon. They're great music lovers, and they don't go to the symphony because they have 2 sons. When they're not on call doing surgery, they want to spend it with their family. Can you blame them? But when they get older, they will. They have the exposure, they have the love, and they will come. So the diversity we talk about, of course, is we care, as we all do. We care about everyone, rich, poor, young, old, Hispanic, African-American. We're trying to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to come and be exposed. That's not easy to do, but we're trying.
I wonder, too, from your take, is you've been now doing this for so many years, and you've seen how technology has changed the music scene. And so now, and this may be to how you reach some of these audiences, now it's not just publishing your music, isn't just printing it on an album. It's putting it up on Spotify. It's putting it up online. It's, you know, making sure you're on social media to connect with people. Do you like that? Do you like how things have changed?
Yes and no. I love connecting with people. So I have a big Facebook presence. I do Facebook Live, and I get, you know, 15, 20,000 people on occasion. You know, a discussion between me and other conductors and other soloists. And I mean, it's really, it's fun for me. And it's fun to be able to do that and realize that you're going to reach however many thousands of people. The negative side is careers in our world used to be made by CDs. Now, they weren't big numbers like pop CDs,
right,
but they were. So if you had a record company, if anybody can remember RCA and Columbia Records, if you have those companies behind you, you had a chance of promoting yourself and making a career. Nowadays, you don't have record companies that do that. And as a result, I find it very difficult to get young artists some traction. And think about the great superstars now. How many in our world of classical music do we have? 3 or 4 or 5?
Right.
And after that, we have artists who are equally great, but they don't have the traction because they don't have that kind of support.
I wanted to, if we could, I think we can get here real quickly, listen to an excerpt from the Brahms Second Symphony. This was performed by the Seattle Symphony Orchestra. This was conducted by you. What can people expect at the concert? I just had to play a little something of yours, what can people expect?
Well, I think you talk about diversity, we have a very diverse program. So the Brahms Second Symphony is one of the great masterpieces of traditional repertoire. This is music that people have all heard. Anyone who is a classical music fan has heard this piece. If you haven't heard this piece, it is one of the great works of art, period. I mean, it's touching, beautiful, and exquisite. But we also have two other pieces on that are less well known that I'm confident the audience will love. Alberto Ginastera's ballet suite, Estancia, the Argentinian composer, a phenomenal composer, died in 83, so it's been a while. And his star has kind of passed. When he was alive, people listened to his music a lot. After he died, not so much anymore. And yet the music is infused with this kind of rhythm that comes from his native land and his and the dynamism that he had as a person. I mean, it's an extraordinary piece. And then we have a work by a living American. Samuel Jones wrote this incredible tuba concerto. Now, you don't get tuba concertos very often. So just the fact that you're going to see Aaron Tindall walk out carrying a tuba is something unusual and very special. You hear him play. There's nothing like the sound of this. I mean, as a solo instrument, how exciting, by a living composer.
Gerard Schwartz is the maestro and conductor of the Frost School Music Faculty and the music director of the Palm Beach Symphony Orchestra. You can see his debut performance conducting this weekend at the Frost School of Music. Details are on our website at WLRN.org. And Gerard, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it. And you know what? For symphonies, what do they say? Good luck. Have a good show.
Say anything you want.
Have a great show. Well, I know I can't tell an actor. I got to tell him break a leg.
No, that's right. Very good. No, I want my legs to have to stand.
Have a great show. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, that's our program for this Tuesday, September 10th. I just want to remind everybody, by the way, that we do have a book club. We are reading our book this month. Hopefully that you will be able to join us on that. Find us on Facebook. Just look up Sundial Book Club. We're reading Miami Midnight by Alex Segura. By the way, we're going to have a Facebook chat with him tomorrow at 7 p.m. online. So go there now. Join for free. We'd love to have you and start posting your questions. Again, you can always find us online at WLRN.org or on social media, Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.